Today's shiur is Masechta Yevamos, Daf Yud Zayin, and we will begin on Daf Tes Zayin and Beis, four lines from the bottom. Amar Yehuda, Amar of Asi, Oiv Kacham Shekidish Mezman Azeh. If a guy makes kedushin in a Jewish woman Mezman Azeh, Chayshin L'Shekedushin, we're concerned that the kedushin is a valid kedushin, for we're concerned Shemes Shema Asaras Hashvatim Hi. Maybe this person who we really assume is a non-Jew is actually a Jew. Because as Rashi explains, Rav Asi holds that if a Jewish man and a Gentile woman have relations, so we're used to believing that if the mother is non-Jewish, the child is non-Jewish. Rav Asi interestingly holds that if a Jewish man has relations with a non-Jewish woman, the child is a mamzer. So we're going to have this person, who we believe is a goy, come to us, and he's even going to tell us that his mother is a non-Jew. We still have to be concerned that perhaps his father was a Jew from the Aseres HaShvatim, and that would make him a mamzer. And now this mamzer has relations with a Jewish woman, and they have children, those children will be mamzer. And as Tosfos explains what forced Rashi to say this pshat in Rav Asi, besides that the Gemara and the Daf Yud Zayin and Aleph seems to indicate that that's what Rav Asi holds, he says, because as we're going to learn in the Gemara and Daf Yud Zayin, that the women of the Aseres HaShvatim, the women of those 10 Shvatim who got lost, were sterile. They couldn't have children. So, therefore, says Rashi, it's difficult to explain that the Gemara is referring to a case where the mother is Jewish and the father is non-Jewish, because the mothers of the Aseres HaShvatim did not have children. Doruch Lener asks, so why is the only Gemara only concerned that this person, if he gets married to a Jewish woman, when actually he's a mamzer, will propagate mamzerim and klal Yisrael? The Gemara should have a different concern. We should not accept his geiris in the first place, because by accepting his geiris in the first place, we're bringing mamzerim into klal Yisrael. So the Aruch Haner answers, accepting his geiris according to this pshat would not be a concern, because it would be a sfek sfeika. Firstly, we do not know if he's a mamzer for sure. It's only a sofik if he's a mamzer. And moreover, even if he is a mamzer, who says that he's going to get married to a Jewish woman that will propagate mamzerim? So therefore it's only a sfek sfeika. Here, however, we're already dealing with a situation where he's going to get married. So there's only one sofik. That's why the Gemara focuses on this concern. As we said, Tosfos has a different explanation of the Gemara, because Tosfos doesn't accept that Rav Asi would hold that if a Jewish man had relations with a non-Jewish woman, that their child would be a mamzer. Tosfos says that everyone would agree that such a child is a non-Jew, and if Tosfos has a different pshat in the Gemara. Ask the Gemara, call the parish, miruba parish. The halacha is that whenever we have a question about the status of something, we follow the majority. So why here don't we say that the majority of people are not Jewish, and therefore we don't have to be concerned that this person is perhaps a Jew, a mamzer? Answers the Gemara, b'dukka de kviya. This is in the place where they are settled, and therefore we apply the concept. This is Rashi's explanation of Kol Kavur Kamechza Bechza Dama. And as the Rishonim explain, the halach is called the parish Meruba parish. As we've explained it previously, if there are 10 butcher shops in a town, 9 are kosher and 1 is not, and a piece of meat is found in the street, and we don't know the status of this piece of meat, is it kosher or not? Called the parish Meruba parish tells us to follow the majority. And if the majority of meat in the city is kosher, we could assume that this piece of meat is kosher. However, if the situation were that someone went in to a butcher shop and bought a piece of meat, even though nine of the, and then doesn't remember which butcher shop he went into, even though nine of the butcher shops are kosher and one is not kosher, there the halach is that kol kavua, where the person went into a place which is established, kamechta mechta dami, we consider it a 50-50 chance, and since it's a question of the raisa, suffik the raisa, l'chumra, the law of majority doesn't follow. Here too, says Rashi, where we have a situation where the seres ha-shvatim are settled, so we, and this person does kedushin, so it's not called the parish, it's the Mekadesh is in a space that's kavua, and we treat it as a kavua mechza mechza dami, and we can't follow roiv, we can't follow the halakhic majority. Tosfos is not satisfied with Rashi's pshat, because Tosfos says that it would make a difference if the woman came to the place of the Mekadesh. There, Rashi's explanation is right. We should follow the halachas of kol kavua kamechza mechza dami, versus if the Mekadesh left his place and came to the woman. So if the Mekadesh left his place, he's no longer in the place of kavua. So therefore, Tosfos has a much simpler explanation of the Gemara. Tosfos says that the Gemara is referring to places where the majority of people are from the Seres HaShvatim, and therefore the Gemara beduk the kavir, that's where they settled, and therefore the roiv that the Gemara wants to rely on doesn't work. There is no roiv that the people there are not from the Seres HaShvatim, and according to Tosfos, the Gemara will now give us various examples of such areas where the Seres HaShvatim were indeed the roiv. Another pshat that I saw and how to explain the Gemara is that here, when would we apply the concept of called the parish, meruba parish, is if we did not know who the Mekadesh was. We want to question, is he a Jew or a non-Jew? Is he a kosher or a non-kosher? There we could rely on called the parish. Here we do know who the Mekadesh is. It's only a question that we don't know what his status is in terms of yichus. That's not a case of called the parish, meruba parish. Darav Abba Bakahana, V'yanachem. The Pasuk says regarding the Seres HaShvatim, he sell them Bechalach or Bechover Nahar Gozoin V'orei Modai. Explains the Gemara the Pasuk. Chalach Zechulozon V'chover Zuchadayev, different cities. Nahar Gozoin Zuginzik V'orei Modai Zuchamdim Chariseho, that's the city of Chamdim, the cities around it. Vamrila, Zuniar, V'chavrseh, the city of Niar and its neighboring cities. Chavrseh Man, what are the neighboring cities of Niar? Om Shmuel, Krachmushi, Chutki, V'dumakia. Om Rav Yochanan, V'kulon of Sul, all of the people who lived in these cities are not considered kosher for Yichus. And as Rashi explains, even though Rav Yochanan does not agree with Rav Asi's psak that we began today's shir, that if a Jewish man had relations with a non-Jewish woman, the child is a mamzer. And also he doesn't agree necessarily with what we learned in the previous shir, that if a eved or eved kechavim have relations with a Jewish woman, that the child is mamzer. Rav Yochanan, however, is concerned that the people who lived in these in cities were Jewish, mostly Aseres HaShvatim, as we just explained, and they had relations that were ervis to each other. The people who were not supposed to be married to each other were Chayiv Krisis, or Chiv and Mrs. Bezdin got married to each other, and their children were Mamzerim. Continues the Gemara. Ki Amrita Kamei de Shmuel, when Rabbi Yehuda said to Shmuel, Rav Asi's halacha that we began the shir with, Omali. So he said to him that you're saying that if the mother is non-Jewish, the child can be Jewish, and therefore we have to be concerned who the father was, is incorrect. Because he said to him, Bincha haba mina Yisrael, Elis, Kari Bincha, only if one's mother is the child is Jewish, is the child considered Jewish? But if the mother is non-Jewish, the child is non-Jewish because it's considered her child. As the Torah says, we're not allowed to intermarry with the non-Jews. Your daughter you should not give to his son. Don't take his daughter for your son. So as the Gemara we will learn later explains, the Pasuk is telling us, when is it your son that we have to be worried that his non-Jewish father will take him away from acting as a Jew? It goes back to the beginning of the Pasuk of when your daughter marries his son. Only then is the child a Jew, and there we have to be concerned that he retain, so to speak, his Jewishness. In the other case, it's not a Jew anyway, and therefore we don't have to be concerned that he retains his Jewishness. Ask the Gemara, Vikabonis. But if we're concerned that the Aseres HaShvatim intermarried, so weren't there cases that the daughters, the women of the Aseres HaShvatim, got married to non-Jews? Vam Ravina, and Ravina told us, Shmamina, based on what Shmuel just taught us, Ben Bitcha Abom Ma'ayv Kachavim, your daughter's son, who comes from a non-Jewish father, but a Jewish mother, Kari Bincha, is called your son, just like his mother is Jewish. So, the children of the women from the Aseres HaShvatim who married non-Jews were Jewish. So therefore we should still be concerned that the non-Jew who marries a Jewish woman might be a Jew, because we'd be concerned that his mother is Jewish, given the fact that they didn't follow the Yichus, as we just explained. Answers the Gemara, there is no concern, as we said at the beginning of the shiur, that this person's mother is Jewish, because Gemiri, we learned, the Bansada Hudara, the daughters of that generation, it's the Ruya Tzara, their wombs were torn from the travel of going through Golis. They became sick, and their wombs were torn, and they weren't able to have children. The Arishanim that said, because the Aseres HaShvatim realized what Tzaris and what Golis they're going to enter, the women not wanting to have children from non-Jewish men specifically made themselves sterile, which would be a big shaila in halach if that's permissible. And therefore, the concern that the mother is Jewish is not what the Gemara is concerned about. The Rav Asi was only concerned that the father may be Jewish, but not the mother. Ikadamri, there's another way of explaining how Shmuel reacted to what Rav Asi said. Kamrita de Shmuel, when Rav Yehuda said over this halacha to Shmuel, Amali lezaz misham ach osam gemar gemurim. Chazal treated all of these people from the Aseres HaShvatim as if they were goyim. Shenemar, Bashem Bogdu, they betrayed Hashem, Kibonim Zorim Yolodu. They were identified as Bonim Zorim, they were considered as non-Jews, and therefore there is no concern, says Shmuel, is he Jewish? Can he affect Kedushin? Can he not affect Kedushin? They're considered non-Jewish. But as Rishonim explain, that when the Gemara says here that they were considered non-Jewish, it's not that they were completely removed from the Jewish nation. It's impossible to remove someone from the Jewish nation. It means specifically regarding the halacha of their kedushin, that their marriage, even if they were Jewish, which is remote concern, their kedushin should not be valid. And it's based on the concept that we know, Afkinu Rabbonon Mikedushim Minei, called Mekadosh Adat Rabbonon Mekadosh. When one affects the Kedushin, he does it with the permission of Chazal, and Chazal said that even if he were Jewish, his Kedushin should not be effective, and we do not have to be concerned. And the Chasam Sofer makes an interesting point. It says that when Ezra brought Klal Yisrael up to Eretz Yisrael, when they built the second base of Migdash, the Pasuk says that Ezra declared that whoever doesn't come to Yerushalayim within 3 days, Yechrim Kavr Choshoy, Vuhu Yibadl Mekahal HaGoyla. Says the Chasam Sofer that this Pasuk is the basis for the power of Beis Din. Yechrim Kavr Choshoy, that all of his possessions will be destroyed, teaches us the concept of Hefker Beis Din Hefker, that Beis Din has the right to make somebody's property ownerless. And the Pasuk of Vuhu Yibadl Mekahal HaGoyla gives Beis Din the authorization to take away somebody's Kedushas Yisrael, that he should not be able to affect Kedushin. But again, as I said, most Rishonim say it's limited only to his ability to make Kedushin, to affect Kedushin, not to remove him from being a member of Klal Yisrael. Says the Meiri that there are, that perhaps Shmuel concept that somebody who abandons being part of Klal Yisrael may even apply not only to the generation of the Aseres HaShvatim, but anyone who's a Meshumad, perhaps the Gemara is teaching us his Kedushin is not valid. However, the Ritva disagrees, and he says that Shmuel's din is limited to Aseres HaShvatim. This Pasuk is speaking only to that generation, but in any other generation, Chazal did not apply this din that a Meshumad's Kedushin should not be valid. And in fact, that's the way the Shulchan Aruch paskins, that the Kedushin of a Meshumad has validity and cannot be dissolved without a get. Yosser of Yosef Achori, the Rav Kahana. The Yosser of Kahana Kamei, the Rav Yehuda, the Yosef of Ka'omar. I swear in Yisrael, the Avi Yam Toivim Kichar Vitarmid. Klaiso will make a Yontif when the city of Tarmid will be destroyed. Ask the Gemara of Acharmiv. Tarmid is destroyed. Answers the Gemara, Hahi Tamid Havoi. The city that was destroyed is Tamid, not Tarmid. Ravashyama, Hainu Tarmid, Hainu Tamid. Indeed, Tarmid and Tamid are one and the same. However, Achbuli Huda Machbul, it would duplicate itself. Chor Mehai Gisa, Asa Mehai Gisa. If it's destroyed on one side, it's rebuilt on the other side. Vichar Mehai Gisa, Asa Mehai Gisa. And if it's destroyed on that side, it's rebuilt on the first side. It was never completely destroyed. And what he meant to say is when the city will be completely destroyed. And as we're learning, the reason is because this city is a city with a question regarding the yichus of the people of the city. So when this city will be destroyed and this concern will no longer be, that will be a yontif. Yasser Hamnuna Kamed Ula. Rav Hamnuna was sitting in front of Ula for Kahav Bishmatza, and Ula was saying a shir, and Rav Huna was speaking to him. And Rav Huna, as Ula was saying the shir, said such remarkable comments. Omar, Magavra, Magavra. What a great person this Rav Hamnuna is. He's such a great Talmud Chacham. Ilav the Harfani Ma'asei. But he has one problem, that he comes from the city of Harfanya. As we're going to learn in the Gemara in a moment, Harfanya was a city where there was a concern that the people who lived in that city were not Miuchasim. So therefore, Ula said Rav Hamnuna has this problem that he comes from the city. And as Mefarshim explained the Gemara, given that Ula was praising Rav Hamnuna for being such a great Talmud Chacham, Ula was concerned that people will certainly want Rav Hamnuna to be their son-in-law. Doesn't everybody want a son-in-law, a Talmud Chacham? So Ula felt compelled to immediately announce that Rav Hamnuna comes from the city of Harfanya, and you should know that he's not a Miyuchas. Uchsef. Rav Hamnuna became embarrassed. So when Ula saw that Rav Hamnuna became embarrassed, he realized that it must be that Rav Hamnuna is not a mamzer. There's nothing to worry about his yichus, because we know that mamzerim are azeponim, the muchutzofim. They would not become embarrassed. If Rav Hamnuna becomes embarrassed, it's a proof that Rav Hamnuna is not a mamzer. So he began to investigate what is the situation, what is the story of the yichus of Rav Hamnuna. Amalei, And Rav Ula asked Rav Hamnuna, Kesef gugulot lahechi yavis, to which city do you pay taxes? Based on the city to which you pay taxes, that's the city which you considered you come from. Amalei lefum nahara. We pay taxes to the city of Nahara. Amalei imkei mefum naharat. So then you're from Nahara, not from Harfanya. Only the people from Harfanya is there a concern about their yichus, not the people from this city. And therefore you're a Talmud Chacham, and we also don't have to be concerned about your yichus. My Harfanya, what does Harfanya mean? Amar Zena, Zaira Har Shakol Panimbay. It was a mountain where all people who had a problem with the yichus, that's where they would go, because they had problems getting married anywhere else. So they all congregated there and found their shidduch. But Masnisatani, Kol Shem Ein Makom Mishpachto V'Shiftoi. If anybody didn't know where his family came, was from, his shevut was from, he had a concern about his yichus, Nifn Lashon would go to that city. Amar Rava V'Mukim Shol. Harfanya is even deeper than Shol. Rashi says Shol means Gehenim. Shinema, the pasuk says, Miyat Shol Eftein Mimavas Agolim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says he's going to take us out from Shol. From death they will be redeemed. V'il psul dedu leslu tekanta. Somebody who has a psul yichus has no remedy. As Mefarshim explained, if someone does Averis, Rachman Utslan, and after he leaves this world, he goes to Gehenim, but whatever kapara he has to receive from Gehenim, then he comes out from Gehenim, and he's fine. But if somebody has a psul yichus, that remains forever. Says the Gemara, psul da harfanya mishum psul da mishin. The problem of harfanya is because the people that came from Meshin, that means people from Meshin moved to harfanya upsule da mishin. And what is the concern of the people in Meshin? From psul da Talmud, because they came from the city of Talmud. And psul the Talmud, and the concern of Talmud is, as we learned in the previous shir, is Mishum Avdei Shloima. As we learned in the previous shir, the Avdei Shloima were non-Jews who had relations with Jewish women. They lived in the city of Talmud, and the Gemara holds that Oiv Kechavim Ve'Eved Haboa Bas Yisrael Havlad Mamzer, and therefore the people of Talmud were Mamzerim, and they ultimately moved from Talmud to Meshin, and from Meshin Harfanya. And Tosfos points out that if so, we could. The Gemara says Masechet Gedushin, Asara Kaben Azus Yordan Loilam. 10 measures of Azus came to the world. 9 took Meshin, and 1 the rest of the world. And usually it's explained because Meshin is a city of Mamzerim, and as we said, Mamzerim are Azeponim. However, as Tosfos, if it all emanates from Talmud, so Talmud should be the city of Azeponim. Says Tosfos, that even though it all emanates from Talmud, the most of the Azeponim moved, most of the Mamzerim moved to Meshin. Another Pshat Tosfos says, is that although Talmud had a large portion of the Jewish population being Mamzerim, Talmud was a city of mostly non-Jews. Meshin, however, was a city mostly of Jews who were Mamzerim as a ponim. And just to point out, since we didn't mention this in the previous year, Al Gemara is going according to the Omer again that holds that Ovik Chom Ve'Ever Abba Bas Yisrael Havlad Mamzer. We don't pask in that way. But there is an interesting machlokes for Shoinim. What is the status of Ovik Chom Ve'Ever Abba Bas Yisrael regarding their requirement to have Geiris? The Taz Paskins, based on the Chem de Shloima, based on other Rishonim, that this person is considered a full-fledged Jew that doesn't require Geiris. However, there are Rishonim that say that even though this person is not considered a Mamzer, Geiris is required. The Marit Al-Ghazi has a very interesting approach. He says that the status of such a child depends on his behavior. If he conducts himself as a Jew, he's considered a Jew, and he doesn't have to have Geiris. If on the other hand he follows the practices of his non-Jewish father, and then he decides to start practicing as a Jew, he requires Geiris. Tosfos also points out that this halacha of Ovik Chom Ve'Ever Abba Bas Yisrael Vlad Mamzer is only going according to Rabbi Kiva, who, as we learned in our perek, holds the Chai V'Lavin create a mamzer, and therefore an eved haba bas yisrael is a chiv lav. That's why the child is a mamzer. However, and oiv kachavim Tosfos says is similar to an eved. That's why he has the same din. However, Tosfos says according to us, who we paskin, that only from chayvi krisis is there a mamzer. Certainly, that's why oiv kachavim veeved haba bas yisrael, the child is not a mamzer. Continues the Gemara, v'hana damer imchi. This, based on what we just learned, is what people say. Kaver rabba v'kaver zuta migdav ozel. A large kav and a small kav, all type of different psulim, all types of disqualifications and yichas, went down to shol, to gehenim, went down to shol, m'shol l'tamud, m'tamud l'meishin, l'meishin l'afanya. Rashi says shol means gehenim. And again, Rashi explains the Gemara the same way as we've been explaining the Gemara till now, that Shol is the smallest concern because Gehenim one could come out from, whereas the other Psulim don't have that, the other Psulim don't have that issue. However, Taisa says that that's difficult to explain because Shol, if Shol means Gehenim and the other places mean cities, what's the connection between Shol and the other cities? Therefore, Taisa says Shol means Bovel. Bavel is called Shol. Shol means Gehenim, which is deep, and Bavel was in a valley, which is also deep. And what the Gemara is saying is that all sorts of people who had a psul in the Yichus went to Bavel, and from Bavel, the Mamzerim went to Tarmud, and like we said, from Tarmud to Meshon, and to Meshon to Arfanya. Hanulah Chamesh Asher Noshim, Hanulah Chamesh Asher Noshim, Hanulah Chamesh Asher Noshim. Just a word of introduction as we begin the next parak, Baruch Hashem. When we learned the first Mishnah about the Chamesh Esrei Arayis, the 15 Arayis that are exempt from Yibum and Chalitza, and not only are they exempt from Yibum and Chalitza, but as we learned, they even exempt their Tzorois. The exemption, there was one example that was different, and that was Eishes Achiv. It was different from all the other women mentioned because they're not really relatives. Eishes Achiv Shlohayu Balamai is a technical concern that these two brothers did not live in the world at the same time. And as the Mefarshim explain, what is the issue? Once the Torah, and we're going to learn the Gemara on Amud Beis, the source for this, once the Torah tells us that Eishes Achiv Shlohayu Balamai is exempt from Yibum and Chalitza, she retains her status as an Eishes Ach, as we said at the beginning of the Masechta. An Eishes Ach is an Erva. Only when there's a mitzvah of Yibum or Chalitza does she lose that status of an Erva, of Eishes Ach. But normally she's a full-fledged Erva. So Eishes Ach of Shlohayi Balomai, where there is no mitzvah of Yibum or Chalitza, this woman retains her status of an Erva, and therefore she's exempt from Yibum Mechalitza, and also exempts her tzara, co-wife. Explains the Mishnah. Keitzer Eishes Achiv Shlohayu Balomai. What does that mean? Shneim Achim or Meis Achimahem. They're two brothers, Reuven and Shimon, and Reuven dies without any children. V'nodalan Ach. And then a third brother, Levi, is born. V'achach Yibum Hashenis Eishes Achiv. Shimon then takes Reuven's widow in Yibum. V'meis. And then Shimon dies. Shimon had another wife. So now when Shimon dies without any children, these two women fall to Yibum. Harishaina, the first wife, that means Reuven's original widow, Yoitza, is not eligible for Yibum or Chalitza from Levi. Because as we explained, Mishum Eishes Achiv Shlohayu Balomai, Levi was only born after Reuven passed away. Vashnia, and Shimon's wife is this that was in the world. Shimon and Levi were in the world together. Is also exempt from Yibum and Chalitza. Mishum Tzarasa, she's the co-wife, and therefore she's exempt. Asba Mamar Vames. Now it continues the Mishnah, as we have learned. Midaraisa, the way Yibum is affected is if the Yavam has relations with the Yavama. That's the only way Midaraisa Yibum is affected. However, Chazal did not want that that's the way a Yavam should marry his Yavama. They wanted it should follow more of the normal path of Kedushin. They wanted they should make Kedushin with a shtar or with kesef. Midaraisa, however, that act is meaningless. So what happened here, the Mishnah explains, the story, is that Reuven died, and Shimon has a wife, and to Reuven's widow he only did Maimer. And then before he could complete this Maisa Yibum of having relations with her, he died. So now, and there's a brother Levi, who was only born, as we said, after Reuven died. So now we need to analyze the situation. Midoy Raisa, Reuven's widow was never married to Shimon, because Maimer doesn't have any standing Midoy Raisa. So the only person that has an issue as of Shimon's death to Levi is Shimon's other wife. So she should have Yibam. On the other hand, if we recognize that Maimer as a marriage, so then she's a Tsaras Erva. Because this is sort of a situation where it's not considered like she's, like Reuven's widow is not on one hand considered Shimon's wife, because it was only Maimer. On the other hand, to say that she's completely not his wife would also not be accurate, because there was a Maimer before in between them. That's why it says the Mishnah. Asba Maimer, if Shimon did Maimer in Reuven's widow, Vemes, and then he passed away before he could complete the Yibum, Shnia, Shimon's own widow, Chaletza, Shedu Chalitza, Vlemus Yabemes, and not do Yibum, even though Midaraisa, Yibum would be allowed. Says the Gemara. And this is the way most Rishonim explain the Gemara. Our Mishnah call the widow of Reuven Harishonah. But there are obviously other Gersos that called her Shnia. Says the Gemara, Amrav Nachman, Mandatani Rishonah, if there's a Gersa, as our Gersa is, calling Reuven's widow Rishonah, the first one, Lemishtabish, it's not a mistake, it could be explained, the Mishnah, that way. Or Mandatani Shnia, Lemishtabish. And if there's a Gersa that calls her the second one, it's not a mistake, it can be explained. Explains the Gemara. Mandatani Rishonah, Lemishtabish. The one that calls her the first is not hard to understand. My Rishon, Rishon Lefnila. She is the first wife that ever fell to Yibam, because Reuven died before Shimon. So Reuven's widow fell to Yibam before any widow of Shimon. Mandatani Shnila Mishtabish. If she's called the second one, it's also not a mistake. It can be explained. Why? Because Shnila Nesuin. She's the second wife to be married to Shimon. Because the Gemara is assuming that Shimon was first married to his own wife and then took Reuven's widow, and therefore she's considered Shnia, she's Shimon's second wife. Ask the Gemara, Mila Yaskinen, who tells us to explain that the Mishnah is only referring to a situation where Shimon was already married and then he takes this woman as his second wife. Reuven's widow becomes a second wife. Perhaps the case of the Mishnah is the Yavam. The first he did Yibum in Reuven's widow, and then he took another wife. It would be the same din. So that's not a reason to call a Shnia. Says the Gemara, my Shnia, why and how can Reuven's widow be called Shnia? Because Shnia ben Asuin, she was married two times. First she was married to Reuven, and then she was married to Shimon. So as we've said, one of the situations where there is no chiv of yibum mechalitza is eishes achiv shlohoy baloma. Ask the Gemara, eishes achiv shlohoy baloma heichik siva. Where in the Torah do we find that this is a reason to exempt a woman from yibum mechalitza? Ask Tosfos. Why does the Gemara have to seek a pasuk to teach us this thing? The halacha is, as we know, that if a person dies with children, his widow is not obligated to have yibum mechalitza. What will be if Rachman Tzlan, those children die? That exemption remains. And the Gemara will teach us later in the Masechta, the reason is because the Rechea Dachinayim V'Dachon Yisivah Seho Sholem. as we explained, the ways of the Torah are pleasant. So it's difficult, so therefore the Gemara says, to first exempt the woman from chalitza and yibum, and then require it is not pleasant. Therefore, asked Tosfos, why does the Gemara have to seek a source to teach us that Eishes Achiv Shalahayu Balamai is exempt from yibum and chalitza? Of course she's exempt. It would be unpleasant. We have a woman whose husband died, didn't have any brothers, we will allow her to get married, and then change her mind when her brother-in-law is then born. So Tosfos says, the need for the pasuk is in a situation where when this woman's husband died, her mother-in-law was already pregnant. So since her mother-in-law was pregnant, she could assume that maybe her mother-in-law will have a boy, and she should wait for the boy, that boy that's being born, to do yibum and chalitza. But of course, if her mother-in-law was not expecting, there is derecha d'achinoyim is enough of a reason to exempt this woman from yibum and chalitza. Ask the mefarshim according on this teretz, even if the mother-in-law was pregnant, there's a 50-50 chance that either she'll have a boy or she'll have a girl. And even if she have a boy, who says that the boy will survive? So how could Taisa say that the woman, the widow, should wait for her brother that's going to be born? Statistically, there is no reason to be concerned for that. So Reb Chaim answers that question, Reb Chaim Briska, in a very interesting way. He says that what would be the halacha if a man dies without children, he has a widow, and according to her knowledge, she has no brother-in-laws. Her in-laws don't live in the same place. It wasn't a world of communication where people knew what was going on. And according to her knowledge, she doesn't have a brother-in-law. So she is prepared to go to get married. And then she gets notification that she indeed does have a brother-in-law. Would we say she's exempt? Of course she's not exempt. She was only exempt because of a lack of knowledge. Says Reb Chaim, of course, if her mother-in-law was expecting, we don't have to make her wait. But if at the end her mother-in-law does have a viable son, so she should be chayiv to have yibum. And it's not a contradiction to recher d'achinoyim. It's only because the pasuk that we're going to learn in a moment teaches us that she's potter from yibum and chalitza under those circumstances. Another teretz that the Rishonim give is that the pasuk could be referring to a case where she anyway has brother-in-laws. So since she anyway has brother-in-laws, she is waiting for yibum chalitza from those brother-in-laws. And then another brother-in-law is born. So that isn't a contradiction to derecha d'achinoyim because she was waiting for yibum chalitza anyway. Another teretz is that when one has children, the entire concept of Zika, which we're going to learn in the next year, Mitzvah Shem, which connects a Yavama to a Yavam, isn't created if there's children. But in the case where there were no children, there is a Zika. There's just nowhere for the Zika to be affected because there's no brother-in-laws. So when a brother-in-law is born, that's where the Zika is chal. That's where it becomes effective. That's why we need a pasuk to exempt her. On the other hand, there's a very interesting Sefer Chassidim. The Sefer Chassidim says that a woman that didn't have a brother-in-law when she became a widow is exempt of Yibum Chalitza, because if her mother-in-law is not even expecting, as we're explaining, it would take at least 10 years till they could have relations. It would take at least about a year till her mother-in-law had the baby. Another 9 years, because we know a man cannot have relations, viable relations, until he's 10 years old. We don't have to be, a woman who's waiting 10 years to get married and doesn't have relations is not able to have children anymore. The entire purpose of Yibum is lahakim shame la'achiv, to rebuild the brother's family. This won't happen anyway. And that's why she's exempt from Yibum. Ask the Mefarshim, according to Sefer Chassidim, again, why do we need a pasuk? There's no reason for Yibum because it's not going to be able to create a child. So to explain, again, like we just said, we're dealing with a situation that she had a brother-in-law, and she's waiting for this brother-in-law to do Yibum with her. Since she's waiting for a brother-in-law to do Yibum, there she does expect to have relations, and that keeps her fertile, that she should be able to have children. Meanwhile, her brother-in-law didn't do relations with, didn't do Yibum with her, and another brother-in-law was born, perhaps we should say that then she should be subject to Yibum. That's what the pasuk comes, that we're going to learn now, teach us that she is not subject to Yibum. Eishish ochem shlohei balomai heich ksiva, Amr Yehuda Merav, Amr Kra, kieshvu achem yachtav. When brothers are together in the world, shahoyslam yeshiva achs ba'olam, that they were together in the world at the same time. Prat leishis ochem shlohei balomai, that they weren't in the world at the same time, they're exempt from Yibum. As Mefarshim explained, if the Torah should have said kiyu achem yachtav, when there are brothers, why did the Torah use the word kiyeshvu? To mean that they had yeshiva achas, they coexisted in the world at the same time. Continues the Gemara to explain the pasuk. Yachtav miyuchad benachla. They are fit to inherit each other. Prat lachim b'naim, brothers from the mother don't, a maternal brother doesn't inherit his brother, only paternal brothers inherit each other. Rav Amar, achim b'na'av, how do we know that only paternal brothers obligate in Yibum? Yalef achva achva b'nei Yaakov. We learn, Gzeir Shavah, the word achva achva from b'nei Yaakov. Ma'ala halam min av loy min aim. The brothers, the Shvatim, were only paternal brothers. They all shared a father, Yaakov. They didn't share mothers. Af kan min av v'loy min aim. So to by Yibum, is it brothers from the father, not from the mother. Ask the Gemara, V'leil of Achva Achva Me'arayis. Why don't we learn Gzeri Shavah from Arayis? That when the Torah speaks about the Isuri Erva, and it speaks about a brother, it refers even to maternal brothers. Answers the Gemara, Donim Achim Achim. The Pasuk uses the word Achim by the mitzvah of Yibum. The Torah uses the word Achim by the Bnei Yaakov. V'ein Donim Achim Malchicha. We don't learn the word Achim, which is said by Yibum, from Achicha, which is the words used by Arias. The Farshim ask that why does the Gemara even want to assume that we should preferably learn from Arias rather than from Yaakov, from the shift of Yaakov? So Farshim say because we're not clear what is the Chumra and what is the Kula. We know whenever we have two possible Gzeris Shavus, we go L'chumra. But here it's hard to say what is the Chumra. Is the Chumra to have Yibum, to require this woman should have Yibum, or is the requirement, is the Chumra of not allowing her to have Yibum and keep the Issa Eishas Ach relevant to Chumra? So Gemara is concerned which is, that's why the Gemara is not sure which Gzeris Shavah to follow, if not for the fact that the Gzeris Shavah from the Bnei Yaakov is a better match. Now, Farshim also point out that many times the Gemara says that we don't learn from something that happened before Matan Torah. The Pasuk of the Bnei Yaakov happened before Matan Torah. So, the Mefarshim answer that the din that we don't learn from a Pasuk from before Matan Torah is only when we're learning a Mamatzinu or a Binyan Av, not when we're learning a Gzeris Shavah. A Gzeris Shavah can even be learned from a Pasuk from before Kabbalah Satayrah. Similarly, Tosfos asks, if we're learning from Bnei Yaakov were all in the world at the same time, so why can that be a source that Eishes Ochiv Shaloi Hayibalama is exempt? So Tosfos says, that is not the characteristic that defines the Bnei Yaakov, that they were or they weren't in the world together, and therefore that cannot be a source to teach us that Eishes Ochiv Shaloi Hayibalama is exempt. Ask the Gemara, we're saying that we learn Ochim Ochim. The Torah uses the word Achim by Yibum and Achim ibn Yaakov versus learning Achim from Achicha. Ask the Ramayin Nafkamina, what's the difference if it's not an exact match? Hatana de Beir Vishmol, the Pasuk says Vishova Koyin or Vakoyin. If there's a neg in a house, so the Torah tells us clearly that if after 1 week the Koyin comes and the nega stay the same, the Kohen inspects the house, and the Torah gives us clear instructions what procedure should be followed. The Torah says that he should remove the stones and scrape off the surrounding plaster, lay new stones, and wait a week to see what develops. However, that's only after, if the kohen came after the first week and saw no change, and only saw it after 2 weeks. What would be the halacha after 1 week, and it came after 2 weeks and saw that it grew? What would be the halacha if after 1 week it grows? The Torah doesn't clearly tell us what to do. But we learn Gzer Shavah from Shavah Koyin Uvah Koyin. So we see that even though the words are not identical, we learn Gzer Shavah. So why are you saying here that we can't learn Achem from Achicha? Answers the Gemara, Hani Mila Hecha Delekim Midi Dedomelei. If there's an option to learn Gzer Shavah, and there's no other words that aren't exact, we can learn Gzer Shavah. Avel Hecha De'ikim Midi Dedomelei, when there's an exact match, with the Dabalai Yopinan. That's why it's preferable to learn Achim Mi Achim, not Achim Mi Achicha. Ask the Gemara, V'leilav Ach V'Achim Aloit. Why don't we learn Gzer Shavah from the word Achim by Loit? The Ksiv, Anoshim Achim Anachnu. The Pasuk says regarding the relation between Loit and Avram, which was an uncle to a nephew, that the Pasuk calls them Achim. And like the Rishonim explained, the Gemara's question here is not to say that only an uncle to a nephew relation is there a requirement of Yibam and not by brothers. The Gemara's question is that perhaps there's a Chiv Yibam even by an uncle nephew relation in addition to brothers. There's also a Shiloh when the Gemara is questioning here that there should be a Chiv Yibam from uncle to nephew. What does that mean? Does it mean the uncle to the nephew's wife, or does it mean the nephew to the uncle's wife? Some Rishonim say it means both. Other Rishonim, it means specifically the nephew to the uncle's wife. They say a very nice pshat. Because as we've been learning, what is the concept of Yibum? That if not for the mitzvah of Yibum, this relation would be osur. Only because there's a mitzvah of Yibum is this relation permissible. Our uncle is always allowed to marry a nephew's widow. It's a nephew that's not allowed to marry an uncle's widow, so that's why the Gemara is referring to a nephew to an uncle. Says the Gemara, Mistabra, it's more sensible to say Bnei Yaakov have a little male if we learn it from the Bnei Yaakov. Mishun the Mufni, the pasuk is extra. Mida have a little mecht of shnei esra avadech bnei avino. The pasuk should have just said that they said to Yosef with 12 servants, the son of one father. Ksiv achim. Why does the pasuk have to add the word achim? Shmaya lefnuye to be extra to learn the gzeir shavah to yibum, that the definition of achim for yibum is achim in a af. Says the Gemara, the itzrug lemicht of achim, the Torah had to write the word achim to establish this gzeir shavah to teach us that yibum is by paternal brothers. The itzrug lemicht of yachtov, it has to say the word yachtov to teach us that they paternal brothers because they share an inheritance. Dikas Rachman Achim, if the Torah had only written the word Achim, Havamina, perhaps we should say Leilof Achva Achim Eloit. We should learn from Loit. Vechitema, and if you'll say Loi Mufni, that the word Achim by Loit is not extra, and we can't use it for Xerishova. Says the Gemara La'ai, Afni Mufni. It is indeed extra. The Midah Havalei Lemicht of Reim, since the Pasuk could have just said that they were Reim, they were companions, V'ksiv Achim, and then the Parasuk went to use the word Achim, Shma min alafnuye. So it must be that it's extra to teach us that even an uncle-nephew relation is considered Achim. That's why Kos Rachmana, that's why the Torah had to write the word Yachtov, Hamichodim benachla, that the paternal brothers now that share one Yerusha, which is only by paternal brothers. But on the other hand, Vikas Rachmana Yachtov, if the Torah would have only written the word Yachtov, Havamina, the Miyachtaba Abba Ima, that the brothers only if they share a father and a mother, as the Mefarshim explained, because that's really what real brothers are about. And perhaps only under such circumstances will we require Yibam. That's why Tzricha, we both had to have the Gzer Shava and Yachtov. Ask the Gemara, why would we think that brothers, only if they share a father and a mother, are considered brothers? Didn't we just say the Yibam Benachla Torah Rachmana? The Yibam is connected to halachas of inheritance. And as we said, Benachla Menav Loi Menaimhi, that inheritance depends on the father, not on the mother. Answer the Mar Itzrach. The whole concept of Yibam, as we've been learning, is a Chiddush. This woman is really an Erva. She's an Eishes Ach. The commissary Erva Gabei. They were allowing someone who's really an Erva to have relations with him. Therefore, we should perhaps say, the only time we're going to allow this to happen is if they're full-fledged brothers, that they share a father and a mother. That's why Tzricha, we need a pasuk to teach us that even if they're just paternal brothers, there is a chiyuv yibam.